Welcome to the Art Scene, presented each week by UALR Public Radio. I'm Anne Nicholson. Opera in the Rock's first show of 2019 is undoubtedly one of the more well-known in the world of opera. Puccini's adaptation of the tale of Madama Butterfly has been heard the world over since its 1904 premiere. This week, we'll hear from Francesca Mondanaro, the soprano having the task of giving Puccini's music a voice. She brings her high-impact sound to the rep stage as the titular character of the 15-year-old Japanese bride known as Butterfly.
In general, when it comes to interpreting any role in opera or any role in straight theater, we can only really pull from our own human experience, right? The end result that we want is to be as honest as we can on stage. And opera in general is a language that is a language of metaphor, right? Where definitely it's the ultimate play pretend. What translates to the audience and what the audience will feel is the honesty of emotion. And I am sure everybody in the audience can remember when they were 13 or 14 or 15 and they were young and innocent and maybe fell in love with a boy or a girl for the very, very first time in their life and felt the miracle of what love feels like as a completely new experience, only to not have it requited. I think it's one of the reasons why Butterfly as an opera is unbelievably popular and is one of the most frequently produced and performed operas, because those feelings and those memories run deep for everybody that comes to see it. So on the other side of it, my job is to remember who I was at that age and to remember what it felt like to not have any guile in a way, and remember the first boy that I fell in love with when I was very young, who maybe didn't like me the same way. The honesty of those feelings will immediately translate. Mm-hmm. Because when I was 15, I didn't look like a 15-year-old Japanese girl, right? I am an older Italian-American woman, right? But the universal language of emotion and feeling and memory is real. And I think that's what's going to translate to the audience.
But you as Madama Butterfly, mm-hmm. as Cho-Cho-San, mm-hmm. is totally unaware.
Yes.
And doesn't really know. She never would have met an American sailor, mm-hmm. let alone one with a certain amount of panache and seniority. Mm-hmm. He was a tall, good-looking man who had every expectation of the small child mm-hmm. that was being led before him mm-hmm. and still not quite sure of himself because he was in a strange land. Mm-hmm. And he had to keep his superiority. And this small child is going to be sort of a plaything.
Yes, but she doesn't see it that way. She takes the wedding seriously. She believes that it's real. And she believes that it's also a way of saving her family in a way. And nobody around her suggests otherwise. And he certainly doesn't suggest otherwise. He promises her that he's going to come back for her. When the timing is right and when all the little robins have returned to their nests and everything has bloomed and, you know, next spring he'll be back to get her. She has no idea what's happening. But I also think this idea of the American soldier being all powerful, we can analyze as much as we want the social specificity between the characters and what was happening at the time for our own edification. As a singing actress, again, it comes down to the emotion. So she sees him, he's dashing, he's handsome, he's American, he's charming, he seduces her in a very gentle way, and she believes him. So that's her own emotional reality. And that's what makes it heartbreaking for the audience, because of course everybody sitting in the seats knows better.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the only innocent one there in the story. That's what makes it a tragedy.
And of course the story itself mm-hmm. is, even with Puccini's music, not quite right. There are aspects of the whole cast that have to be convinced that this is real, because the child has to be given the grace of not knowing mm-hmm. what is going to happen to her.
Well, we have to remember that for the time and for the specific training of what it means to be geisha, we have to remember that in real life and in reality, the training of geisha started at 5 and 6 and 7 years old. So within the societal expectations, she would have been clear of certain things. We need to make sure we understand as Americans that we don't mistake geisha for somehow being very well-trained women of the night. That is not the original societal role. They truly were courtesans of the arts only. But we also have to remember the backstory of Butterfly specifically. She came from a very honorable family that lost their wealth. They lost their financial wealth. The father committed suicide by honor. So there was no patriarch basically taking care of the family anymore. So she was basically, as was typical in real life, given over probably to a specific house, a specific geisha house for training at a young age. So there were certain things that she would have known to expect. I think the thing that she didn't realize was that her marriage and the marital ceremony was not being taken seriously by the man that she was falling in love with. That's the tragedy.
Well, you are obviously very well into the role.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, from the way you're talking, that you are very much involved with the history
mm-hmm.
of this.
Absolutely.
And to do that, you have to be able to involve yourself mm-hmm. in a way that doesn't always happen in many roles.
That's a very interesting point, because I think it has more to do with an actor's or a singer's specific process and what their own discipline is. It's my own personal discipline that no matter what role I am going to perform or that I've been hired to sing professionally, I always do as much research as humanly possible. You know, there are the things that we have control over. There are things that we don't have control over. And I say the same thing to my students and to the young artists that I work with, you know, as an educator, that it's part of our responsibility to do as much background research that we can get our hands on.
Have you sung this role before?
No, this is my first Butterfly, which is really exciting. Really exciting.
How have you absorbed all that's going to go in this space-time?
I would say that I have just taken my time, that I've been reading resource material, I've been watching documentaries, I read a very interesting autobiography written by professional geisha. All of this research has been happening really over the past 9 months, working on it every single day. After living in Berlin, Germany for about 4 years, I returned to New York City this summer, and there's the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and they have an amazing Asian wing, and there was a whole display of only kimono that I went to go see. There's the Japan Society House that's close to the UN. So I went and I did research there. It's this very funny way. I call it the creative primordial soup. You just kind of pull at everything that you can. The creative process in general is not logical by nature. Creativity and creative energy is sort of associative and not logical. And so you just sort of pickle and marinate in all of this information. And then there's the homework that you do on the role itself, which is the score and the libretto and what the, you know, what the composer is asking of you. It takes a lot of work. So for two performances, the work started almost a full year ago. As soon as I was invited to do the role, I started the work. Mm-hmm.
The thing is, of course, that Japan and America and the West were very friendly with each other.
Yes, they were.
I have a grandfather, and he has brothers, and they were all born in Japan. Mm. And they had a father who was a seinen captain. Mm-hmm. And so they went back and forth. And it was worlds meeting.
Yes, absolutely.
But they were all comfortable with each other. Mm-hmm. And this is an aspect of it that Puccini wove his magic with.
Absolutely.
But there's so much practical connection mm-hmm. between the races that they were all very comfortable with each other.
It's interesting that you say that. For a very long time, I come from a cultured household. My father is an artist and an architect. He designed and built the house that I grew up in. My mother was an educator. So from the time that I was a very little girl, my parents were taking me to the theater. They were taking me to the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And for a long time, I've been absolutely fascinated with the art form that's particular to Japan, which is all of the Japanese woodblock prints. I love them. And what I find so fascinating is that the ones that are my favorites were made by artists who started using much more concentrated dyes that they bought from the Dutch. It completely changed the intensity of this really beautiful art form. And then at the same time, we look at the paintings of Van Gogh and we see how influenced he was by the Japanese prints. So it's, artistically speaking, this really fascinating superimposition of one culture over the other. And Puccini himself was absolutely fascinated by this play that was written by Belasco. He probably didn't understand half of what was being spoken, but he was so taken by this very poetic story. And I had this discussion with our stage director, David Ward. One of the things that I find very interesting is that Japanese as a language itself, which I do not speak, but I have a close relative that is fluent in it. The language itself is very poetic, that there are three or four meanings and subtexts going on within the way the kanji are written and what's being spoken. And what I find interesting is that Butterfly's Italian is very, very poetic. She's always speaking in metaphor. She's always going back to the symbolism of nature, which is very, very Japanese, finding spirituality in nature and the symbolism of flora and fauna that we see in all of these screen paintings, as well as the, you know, the Japanese woodblock prints. So it's very, very rich culturally. And I think in today's day and age, we want to be very sensitive about the whole concept of cultural appropriation. We want to pay respect to a culture that's different from ourselves and not diminish or devalue the individuality and uniqueness of a culture that we were not brought up in. But I think that with this production and with how Puccini loved this story about this young Japanese girl in particular, it's really celebrating and honoring what's different and unique about Eastern culture as, you know, as reflected in the libretto and the music.
And in any production of this particular show is enriched by this.
Absolutely.
They go into it knowing that they will be wearing wonderful clothes, mm-hmm. that the material is picturesque, and in many countries would be almost too valuable to be worn.
Absolutely.
And these are things that not many people in the audience would even know.
No.
Quite what, except for the kimono.
Exactly.
And it's very interesting to know that there are staff people who would be attracted to the performance, mm-hmm. just to see how others would portray the things that they've grown up with. And I think that with you, you've got an unusual background yourself, mm-hmm. and it has expanded to embrace a lot of things in most of your roles, I would think, not just the Japanese one.
It's really interesting. And again, I've heard colleagues say this too, that, you know, in the end, it's about feelings and what people need and want from one another and what they do to go about getting it. Most of the women that I play are not very nice. It's really refreshing to play a young innocent. I'm Abigail or Fata Morgana or Norma, you know, these ladies that are very powerful and, you know, or Lady Macbeth, you know, these are very different types of ladies. But in the end, all you can really do is pull from honest experience. And so what ends up happening is you end up exercising or excavating a part of your personality that maybe you haven't paid attention to for a long time. So depending on the personality of the woman that I'm playing, it takes me down a different part of my own memory lane or my own experience as a girl or a woman. It's really, really interesting.
Well, this is also going back in time.
Yes.
Because it's your youth that you are having to exploit.
Absolutely.
And your innocence comes back to you, I would think.
It absolutely does, yes. And there's a kind of, I think that's what makes Butterfly so beautiful, that there is something very poetic and spiritually mature about her, but she's truly open. She's truly without guile. She's very soft and she's very vulnerable. And that we hear it in the music, we hear it in the phrasing and the type of highly poetic Italian, again, that she uses. And it does affect the way that I sit, the way that I stand, how open and soft I feel in my body when I'm singing. I've had to train myself out of the way that I hold myself as a woman. I mean, as an outspoken American, Italian, Jewish lady from New York, all of the physical, you know, gestures, all the hand gestures, all the larger than life, you know, facial expressions, all of that has to go away.
Have you ever played in a role quite as demanding as this?
I would say that Butterfly is the most vulnerable and the softest person I've ever had to be. Everybody else that I've played professionally has been much more either world-weary or world-wise. They're women that are very cagey, usually. And much more empowered. Butterfly is sort of a victim of everybody else's decisions.
Have you brought yourself down into working with not only a culture, but the actual people and how they live?
I haven't had the chance to speak with any native Japanese. The best that I was able to do was actually do a lot of research on a Japanese, interestingly enough, a Japanese theater teacher named, I hope I'm saying this correctly, Tadashi Suzuki, who started a whole movement that really came from the no and kabuki theater. And his style of acting is specifically very physical. His sort of acolytes or people who follow his method of acting are usually put their bodies through a lot of physical duress in very stylized work. I was able to speak very, very briefly with a fabulous actress that's really the lead actress of this this theater that's in Shizuoka, which is sort of a following of his specific teaching. I got to see her live. So fascinating. Speaking of the culture sort of superimposing on one another, this theater troupe specifically interprets Greek and Western classics using kabuki and no. And I saw them interpret Medea, of all things, and it was one of the most thrilling things I had ever seen in my life. It was, again, at Japan Society House, you know, in New York City. And I was able to speak to the young woman who was the kabuki interpreter for the Medea. And she was this tiny little slip of a thing. And was like, I remember thinking of her as an iron butterfly. She was both very, very fragile and extremely strong at the same time. And it all came out through every single tiny movement being very deliberate. And I learned a lot.
Would you say that Medea and Kabuki and butterfly have a lot in common?
Absolutely, I do. I think that Butterfly, as the young woman that she is, has lived a life in which her own physical movements were restrained, and she was self-conscious of them at all times. We have to remember that she might not have started training as early as 5 or 6, but she probably didn't start too much later than that. She's already been working professionally. She's already been entertaining as a dancer and a singer. So, and she's living in a culture in which all of her movements are being watched and all of her physical movements mean something.
So approaching this role, where do you find yourself the strongest?
I think I find myself the strongest in just being able to stay emotionally true. I think I've disciplined myself to make Francesca disappear so that Butterfly can be present, and trust that if I lose myself in being self-conscious, that I'm not even close to being 15 years old and have never had the chance to visit Japan, then I lose my ability to be honest. And I think I've done a good job of letting go of that and throwing myself into being emotionally vulnerable in front of a couple of hundred strangers for Friday and Sunday night. That would work very hard to do.
But you've got a certain number of things already comfortably absorbed.
Yes.
And this way you can then start to infiltrate some of the things that you've never had a chance to do before.
You know, it's funny. It makes me think of a couple of things. One is that, you know, my voice teacher says all the time, you have to work to the point of obsession so that you can then forget everything. And what happens is there's this line that you cross in which the body remembers everything that the brain doesn't remember anymore. And the other thing, too, is that artists are never really satisfied. We never really feel like we're finished. I remember I worked with the mezzo Mignon Dunne. As a young student, she had quite the illustrious career in Europe. And I remember she used to say, well, you know, honey, the second time I got to do a role, then I felt like I was really enjoying myself. But all of that year or 2 years of preparation to do a role for the first time was still just practice. And that's what it really means, I think, to devote yourself to your artistic craft and to the craft of singing. Because opera is the most involved, I think, out of the performative arts. It's asking you to be a consummate musician with your vocal instrument, to be a vocal athlete, to be an actress at this all at the same time, which is why I think it's so thrilling and captivating. It is truly a larger than life experience for the artist.
And you're performing on one of our favorite stages. Mm. And the stage that you're on has had many, many people. And it's the sort of thing that you don't realize until you're involved in it, how vital that stage has become.
Yes.
And I was thinking, when I'd heard that it was going to be on the rep stage, that you were very fortunate because that place has history. And that role has history.
It does. It's an honor. It's an absolute honor to be able to have the chance to sing Butterfly and to sing this beautiful theater. And what's special about it is that it's so intimate that no matter where you sit, you are definitely enwrapped in everything that's going on. And we have a chance to, I think, take musical and artistic risks that one wouldn't be able to do at a larger theater. You know, I mean, I sang Abigail at Deutsche Oper Berlin for several seasons, and the kind of minutiae that we're sort of experimenting with in the Butterfly, it wouldn't even read in that house, you know? So we really get to dig a little deeper, I think, and take a higher level of artistic risk in this house than if we were sort of in a big barn.
And I wonder how much you have to express the humanity of it and the personality of it. Mm-hmm. Because some of it, as an actress, you might not want to show quite what you're feeling.
Yeah.
And others might be that you want to do more of it.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is that we can't be selfish. We have to really serve the character. There's this sort of magical connection that you make between yourself and the audience only by getting out of your own way. And when Francesca the diva or Francesca the soprano starts showing up because she wants to do this or she wants to make that sound, I know immediately I'm going to lose the connection.
So now, have you all been on the stage actually presenting? You haven't actually done a performance yet?
No. We had what's called a tech run, which is all four lighting cues and props and sort of repositioning everybody. We had an orchestra dress last night, which is basically the first run. We have a second orchestra dress tonight, which is actually unusual. We're dealing with a very compressed schedule. It's kind of a miracle that we have put together with this opera company an opera that's about 2 hours and 45 minutes up on its feet in about 10 days, 12 days at the most. It's kind of amazing. And it says a lot about the collegiality and the hard work of everybody involved. But tonight will sort of be our last trial run to sort of get it set and to figure out if there are any little straggling things that feel uncomfortable musically or staging-wise. And then I, as the Butterfly, will take all of my dozens of staging notes and musical notes with me and go back and sit down in the privacy of my apartment with my score. And then, you know, it's my responsibility. It's part of my job to make sure that I hit all the marks for opening.
Do you find anything within all this that you've just described intimidating?
Strangely enough, no, which is probably why I'm singing, which is why I love it. I just love it. It's a joy to do it. I love the work. I love the feel of the work. In the end, I feel like the performance is kind of a celebration and showing off to and sharing with the audience all this amazing journey that we had together. I love the hard work of it, and I love the research and the practice and, you know, and the trying on of the role. It's just really wonderful.
That was Francesca Mondanaro, operatic soprano who sings the leading role in the Opera in the Rocks production of Puccini's Madama Butterfly. The show runs May 17th at 7:30 and May 19th at 2:30. Thank you. And that concludes the program for this week. Please join us next weekend at the same time. I'm Ann Nicholson. Thank you for listening.
The Art Scene is a presentation of UA Little Rock Public Radio.